that whole business, the relationships with Bryn Mawr began to develop. The shuttle bus was born in 1965.
Yeah.
Abolished meeting, required meeting in parietal hours in 1966, and the board was involved in both of those. I don't know whether you remember anything about
that. I remember that on some of those issues, like on women, co-education, I do recall specifically members of the board who I thought were quiet, circumspect people, you know, until they got to an issue like this, and they were rather vehement about it. And I was concerned myself, but in a different way. I was much in favor, of course, of admission of women. And I was surprised at the animosity that it generated amongst some of the nice the nice friends that wouldn't have no, you know, never have a, you know, we've gone along for all these years. This is what, in the late 70s to 1933, and we've been happy this way, and so let's continue on. And I thought, my God, they have no vision. And I was saying this to myself, you know.
I never quite understood the anger. I think for some people, it was the threatening of Bryn Mawr.
Oh,
and that was responsible for some of the anger.
Well, it certainly was, because I remember I learned one member who was particularly felt a little slightly younger than myself, that felt strongly about that, and I found out in a conversation with him subsequently that his wife happened to be a Bryn Mawr woman. Mm-hmm. And so that was the angle that he took. Mm-hmm. You know, it was good faith about that, mm-hmm. But he and his wife felt strongly about it, and it's true. And as it turned out, there was no concern, was it? Actually, because Bryn Mawr, if anything, that from what I read, the conditions are still good.
I read in the news yesterday that they had their second highest number of applicants this year. I was pleased to see that.
You mean the Bryn Mawr?
Bryn Mawr,
yeah.
Second highest in their history this year.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's caused changes for them, and it's caused changes for Haverford, too.
Sure.
But it wasn't as catastrophic as people thought it was going to be.
Now, how did you, tell me, this can be on or off the record, but how did you, what was your, as Director of Admissions, what was your reaction to this? I mean, did you find that when we finally let the barriers down, that we were getting better people coming?
Well, of course.
Of course we were.
Not only that, in the last couple of years before we admitted women, it became increasingly difficult because women would come around to talk and to tell them why we can't admit you just because you're a woman. That was very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And for men coming around, it was, what's wrong with your institution? Why aren't you keeping step with the times? Because all the other institutions had going.
Yeah, I didn't realize until after the fact that we were woefully behind.
Well, we were one of the last.
My God. How could it have been possible that we were so laggard in that?
Well, I think hasn't Haverford, my experience with Haverford over a long period of time,
it's always
been moved slowly.
That's true. I shouldn't have said that, because that's typical. Right. And then in some respects, that's treasurable. That quality.
And I think it was just very, very difficult for people to move.
People
to think about it.
It's so comfortable for all these years the way it had been. Why?
Well, and this was the way you did things. If we go back to our discussion of the 30s when you were in college, you did things because this was just the way it
was done. That's right. The way it was done.
You accepted this.
Yeah.
And I do think there was a certain amount of big brother protection of Bryn Mawr, feeling of protection of Bryn Mawr.
Yes.
This was part of it.
And I think Bryn Mawr seemed to me felt, to some degree, Bryn Mawr felt threatened too.
Oh yes, very much.
And that had an effect on the Haverford board, you know, course, we have a commingling of directors, they're members, you know, and so that the, I remember that, but that was a concern.
I think, too, the board began to realize that the two colleges really did depend on each other.
Yeah.
And that they weren't going to continue, Haverford wasn't going to continue with as a quality institution unless it was able to use some of the resources of Bryn Mawr.
Right, right.
And this was a time of $500,000 deficits.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Haverford. Yeah. Yeah, that was...
It's always been a bit of a mystery to me how conservative members of the board allowed those deficits to continue.
Oh yes, were they looking the other way, or what?
I don't know. I don't understand that. Do you have a memory of it being discussed?
Not seriously. I don't recall it being. So now I don't know what my forte was. Certainly was not finance, but I don't recall that anybody being concerned about it. And we ran deficit for so many years,
yes.
If I recall.
Yeah.
It was commonplace almost, you know? Mm-hmm. So nobody never talked about balancing the budget or something like that.
And it's one of Robert Stevens's, I think, great accomplishments, because he finally got the college out of that.
Well, that's right. And I guess...
The endowment was paid back.
Maybe it was one of Coleman's deficiencies. Mm-hmm. That he didn't.
Ironic that an economist.
Yeah.
Or maybe appropriate.
Yeah.
There was a matter of again freedom of belief, a matter of state scholarship program, FIA. Do you remember it?
No, I don't recall that. What was that? An acronym for?
Well, for Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency, they wanted to have reports on
Higher
students.
Higher Education Assistance Agency.
Yeah, which is a scholarship agency. It still exists.
Right, yeah.
They wanted to have reports on the conduct of students that the college administration thought was going beyond what they should be asking.
Was this in my time now?
In 1969.
Oh, 69. Oh,
and the board took a stance on that.
Yeah.
But you don't have any
memory. I don't have any independent recollection of that, no. I do not.
There was a time, of course, of student unrest. And that trip to Washington. Did you hear at the time of Cambodia invasion?
Oh, yeah. You know, I always felt so bad that I didn't participate. Were you there?
Yes.
See, and I didn't go. I had an opportunity to go, but we all did. And I was just too GD lazy, I guess. I'm not sure, but I didn't go. And I always felt remiss. I felt I'd missed something.
Another thing were minority boycotts. Did you in 1972? Did you have any part in dealing with that?
No, I don't think so. I don't know where I was. All these wonderful things were happening.
Well, I think in a lot of ways, this is one of the questions I'm going to ask you. Maybe this is the time to ask. A lot of things I think never quite got to the board.
I don't remember.
I don't think it was a matter of the administration shielding the board.
Yeah.
But the board, in some ways, wasn't involved.
Yeah.
And didn't know.
Well, I'm not really sure that the board should be. I should think they're
well,
involved
that's,
with that.
That's
but
a question.
They weren't.
Mm. You know, that's a question, too.
Yeah. Is that purely an administrative affair? You know, I don't know.
I think that the other side of that coin then was coeducation, when the board did become deeply involved.
Yeah.
And the college community wasn't so sure that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of those, particularly that discussion at the time that the faculty and Jack brought the proposal for the admission of women to the board the last time, and the board turned it down and agreed to transfer women, and that resulted in Jack's resignation.
Leaving.
Do you remember any of those circumstances?
No, I just remember it was. I can't recall anything specific. I just know it was a low point for him, a low point for me, because I felt close to him. Mm. I wasn't really. It was impossible to get close to Jack Coleman. So it was a figment of my imagination. But he lead you to that, you know, feel. And I just felt, I felt warm about him. I felt he was contributing to Haverford, and I just, I felt sorry for him and for Haverford.
Do you think the board knew that their position would result in his resignation?
I think so. I think some were.
And were they hoping for it?
Some were happy to see it happen, I would think, yes.
Because of co-education issues or other issues?
Well, I think it's a combination, not co-education specific, because I think he's a man of strong views mm-hmm. about a number of subjects, and not overly conservative, and I think that he rubbed people the wrong way in several areas, not exclusively in co-education. But when I look back on my terms, my long term in the board, I'm not sure that I contributed anything. My presence was there, but I'm not sure that I participated or made it. I didn't make an imprint on the Haverford of today. I don't think I did, except as I went along. But I think there's a possibility. There's a possibility you could serve at a board level, and do relatively little. If you're not on the finance committee, my colleague down the road, Bill Meyer, for many years, the treasurer of the corporation, he ran fiscal affairs. So that was all done. It was all cut and dried. Jonathan Rhodes, in his own quiet way, knew which way to go, and we didn't quarrel with Jonathan. I didn't know as much about Robert Stevens, for example, as you do. I never got to know him, and I was not that much impressed. Maybe that was a hangover from being impressed with his predecessor, Coleman, and comparing the two. I thought Stevens, there was a coldness to him, and I said that I couldn't penetrate. I didn't try to, as a matter of fact. So I'm not, but did you say he contributed? Among other things,
he contributed, I think, the two things, three things, really. He said when he came that he felt that until co-education was settled and until the matter of diversity was settled, and he was talking primarily of diversity in the faculty, that Haverford really couldn't move ahead.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he did, he got them settled in a fairly short period of time.
But of course, the Coleman had already set that up for him.
Well, that's right. That's right.
I mean, it's a question of almost a fait accompli.
It was necessary.
It needed a new face to do it.
I was going to say, it needed a new cast of characters.
Right.
Pat McPherson came to Bryn Mawr at about the same time Robert came to Haverford. Pat was a good thing to replace Harris Wofford, because Harris had gotten entrenched in things too.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you one thing, that you had a very positive impact on me as a board member, because you were very kind and supportive during that co-education time.
Well, I felt...
You were very kind, and I thank you for that.
Well, yeah, but...
And I expect you were supportive to other people.
I was reacting to my heart and my mind there. I just felt so keenly about it. And so it was not hard to be on your side. I had no other side to go. And, you know, being Irish and being, I can be so intolerant of people who don't agree with me. And I think I'm so right. And that was one of the things I felt so right about, about co-education.
I think that's what made it difficult. There were people on the other side who felt so right, too.
You're damn right, yes. I reluctantly say you're right.
Me too. And another place you had an impact, which I don't think was board things, but we'll talk a little bit about it, was the founding of the Alumni Varsity Club.
Oh, golly, yes.
Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, well,
you were a founder and you were first president.
That's right. I'm not sure. That was a folk in me, yeah. But as I mentioned to you on the phone the other day, I think whose idea it was, I'm not sure. I'll take partial credit for it. Bill Shepherd, who was director of alumni affairs then, right? And who was a classmate of mine and was also manager of the football team at Hanford College. It was his eye. He was enthusiastic about it, and also was Jim Bradbeer. Mm-hmm. So the three of us had a used to get together. We nursed the idea along. We got other people enthused about it, and we finally formed a group, a committee, and I liked it after over some nice, cool cocktails at the old Haverford Hotel there, mm-hmm. right across from Marion Cricket Club, why we got a group of us, and maybe you were one at that point.
I don't remember.
I remember that we had our initial meeting at the old Haverford Hotel, and we got a charter. I got the charter from them. I'm not sure whether I think we're a Delaware corporation, but silly things like that. You know. But then that started us off, and actually for a few years we were rather an active group. I still have the charter. I still have the minutes. I think somewhere in my file out here, because nobody at Haverford has ever asked to see them. I don't know who's in charge of it. Of the alumni varsity club at Haverford. Is there a person? Is it the alumni office?
Co-presidents every year.
Oh, I know. They manage to get new people.
I think the place to do that, send that is not maybe the varsity club, but to send it to the library and let it be in the collection of Haverfordiana.
Well, maybe that's a good idea. If you don't mind, I'll
No, I'd be very glad to take that.
I'd be glad to give it to you if you
sure.
wish.
Sure. So no, I'd be glad to take that, and I'm sure they'd be glad to have it.
Yeah, but I mean, at least it should be reposing
that's
somewhere
right.
other
no,
than
no.
in my file.
Yeah. Well, I think it did have an important impact and continues to have an important impact. I think it came at a time when athletics really weren't very well thought of.
Yeah.
And athletes weren't very well thought of, and I think it changed that.
Yeah.
And it continues to have an impact, I think.
Of course, I think you probably were more conscious of it.
Yes.
Rightly so, being so close to that, mm-hmm. as you were, mm-hmm. than I. Mm. But I felt that we, initially we had a nice time. We had some nice affairs, and we raised a little money.
Yeah.
It didn't make a big dent in Haverford's financial affairs, but we enjoyed it. But I'm glad it's still going on to some degree.
They have three awards banquets a year.
Yeah,
students look forward to.
I think it's better than we ever did. I think
one of the things that struck me. So many ways it struck me when I came to Haverford is that my high school had better athletic facilities and gave better had better coaching maybe, and had more recognition for athletes than Haverford did.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's changed over a period of time.
Yeah, that's true. Did I tell you when I was telling you about the two shots for Kane? You know that final.
Yes.
That Pete Lewis, who
yes.
is my coach at high school, was the referee for this
was
game.
He?
He was the one that said two shots. It gives credit to somebody else, but I think it was Pete Lewis. He gave me a chance to be a star, and I failed him.
So you're a ringer all the way through. I mean, Tat Brown got you in as an athlete. Pete Lewis gave you a chance to win a game because you knew him.
It was my fault if I didn't succeed.
One of my fondest memories of you is the day that you received a Haverford Award. It was in the spring, Alumni Award. It was in the spring in the field house.
I know what you're going to tell me.
And people, what am I going to tell you?
I said I deserve it.
That's right. But you didn't mutter it. You said it in very strong terms. I deserved it.
Well, I happen to feel that way.
Well, I think you did.
Yeah.
But I also thought that was vintage Arthur King.
Well, it certainly turns out it was, yeah.
And then I went back and looked at the pictures in the yearbook, I realized you hadn't changed since you were 17 or 18 year old.
Oh, well, that's a little impressive.
You look pretty feisty at these
yeah.
times.
Yeah, well, that was it. Did I, you know, that this is nothing to do with that. This is not for publication. It doesn't matter. I don't care what. My father who was a devoted parent. I lost my mother when he lost his wife when my sister was born, so that I never had a mother. But anyway, so he was very close to me. I loved him dearly, and we did an awful lot of things together. And he used to go out like fathers do, and he had this is in the early days, relatively early days of motion pictures, and he had a camera. And at one point, I think it was in my senior year when I was captain of the team, and we were playing, and I've forgotten the team now, what it was, Stevens, no, it wasn't Stevens, Hamilton, I think. We won 26-20, but anyway, we had an end around. Bill Tiernan was the quarterback, and so we had an end around. I was right end, and he passed the ball to me, and I went around the left end, and he blocked the left end out of the picture, did a beautiful block, and I sailed on for about 65 yards to my one and only touchdown in my career. Not having for but ever anywhere. I was shocked that I was out in the open. What did I do, you know? But I
fall down.
And here was my father with his camera, you know, following this stranger down the field and caught all of it. And then after it was all over, he went over to the bench to where it was. Somebody says, "Who did that?" Here, so he caught me. So I'm always tempted to go upstairs. I'm tempted, but I resisted to go upstairs and find that old film and bring it out and relish it.
You should.
Isn't that something? But boy, I talk about hitting the highlights, the high point of my, you know, the apex of my career was when I was scored. When my father had it documented for history.
Roy must have become.
Did you ever score a touchdown to all your?
Yes, and I was a lineman. I blocked
some
kicks.
Yeah.
I blocked some kicks along the way.
Oh, did you? Yeah, you were a good lineman. You were a center, weren't you?
No, I was a tackle. It's the same. When you were talking about your 170 pounds, I was talking about thinking about my 170-pound tackle.
No kidding. Yeah.
But this, are there other things, Art? I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Well, it certainly,
it's been a lot of fun.
I enjoyed myself talking. You know, I always enjoy talking about myself.
Let's turn it off.
Let's do that, yeah.